Chairman, Stephen Mayne, shareholder. This is the same room where PASMIGO had their last AGM, Australia's most famous hedging collapse, so I don't want to get lynched asking this, but your comments about copper and zinc and the fundamentals, Owen's comments, and the fact that they're going to rise forever and then some, probably don't really apply as much to gold because of the consumption patterns with gold and the 80 tonnes that the Australian Reserve Bank's got and all the other hundreds of tonnes sitting in central banks around the world. So my question is, even though our hedging gene has been removed, given that gold is at seemingly stupid prices, wouldn't it make sense to be at least a little bit flexible on hedging and just take a view and say, well, if it goes through 700, we'll hedge 10%? Because there's every chance gold could go back to 500 and we'll sit here in a year's time and say, if only we'd hedged. So I agree, everyone's gone, companies have gone broke, but are we a little bit flexible on something like gold, which just seems to be getting swept along by the bubble, which is driven by more fundamental issues in many other metals?
Well, you might know more about the gold market than I do, but I can't predict the price. There are plenty of people in the industry who are talking, Owen's a conservative, 640 plus. I mean, there's $1,000 and others running around. And thank God we didn't take that conservative position a few years ago when it was much lower on the day and say, oh, we'll take a little bit of hedging, we'll take a bit of this, because it really hurts. And have a look at some of the companies now that have very big burdens that are way out of the money. As a philosophy, we like to take some of the risk on price because we do believe in the future at the minute for the fundamentals. We think the exposure to price has served us very well. We are not ideologically driven, however, and every period now and then we'll sit around the board table and say, well, how do we see the future and how do we see what our shareholders would like us to do in laying off some risk? The banks, of course, would love us to take hedging. They make money out of it, win, lose or draw. So what we've done when we've tried to protect downside for them is not in fact lock us into a price, but to buy some options which protect the downside but leave us with the exposure to the upside.
Chairman, I wasn't going to speak on this, given that obviously the performance has been so fantastic, but I seem to pick you up on what you just said. The average no vote against the REM report has been nothing like 35 to 45%. It's more around the 10 to 15%. And a 46% no vote is easily the biggest no vote of any top 200 company. We saw Novagen go down. They're a relative tiddler. So I haven't looked at the detail, but clearly there's a major issue with the proxy advisory firms, ISS and Corporate Governance International, who tell the institutions how to vote. Now, I must admit I'm quite gobsmacked because obviously the tone of the meeting, everyone's celebrating a wonderful performance, and then by jingo, you've suddenly almost gone down on the REM report, unlike any other company, and probably without management voting, you would have gone down, which is pretty embarrassing. I mean, it hasn't happened before for a major company. So I think you need to tell the shareholders precisely what the issue is. I suspect it's probably insufficient hurdles, options aren't too short-dated, etc. But with a vote like that, this is quite a shock, and you've clearly got a pretty serious problem with your structure. And can you just tell the shareholders precisely what it is that the institutions are complaining about? Because 46% is a hell of a loud complaint.
Was there a consistent response from the institutions? We'd be quite happy to tell them what the issue was. It hasn't been consistent. The fact, as you mentioned, hurdle rates, retirement benefits, length of time for measuring performance, all of those have in fact been mentioned in our discussions. Now, we haven't had very long to conduct these discussions and they require much more depth to see whether there is a consistent feeling. And I've said we'll do that. But at this stage, I can't just say, well, it's this issue that has caused that. I don't know whether you want to add anything. David, you've spoken with these people.
Certainly ISS had an issue, but the corporate governance did not, Stephen. Certainly the management wouldn't be voting on a thing like this. It's not the way we conduct operations here. So we're obviously disappointed. We just it's just across the board, and you're fully. I don't know what survey you talk about. 10%. The ones that we've seen, you know, in some cases last year were 20, 30, 40%. So we can be at odds on that one. But we're certainly looking into it. We're disappointed given the share performance and all the sort of reactions and feedbacks we get. So we'll continue to look into it and see what we can do on it so that we can get it down next year.
Chairman, I've got no problems with this. Your 137,000 a year is very modest compared to other companies. I was at the GPT AGM in Sydney a couple of days ago. Their chairman's on 300. Most chairmen of top 50 companies are on sort of the 250, 300. So I guess I've got no complaints about it. I'm still a little bit in shock with that REM report vote, which is truly extraordinary. And I think I've worked out what the issue might be. There isn't an issue with your retirement benefits because you've closed the scheme, which you should have done, because those benefits which give you more and more money based on the longer you've served act as a good behaviour bond, if you like, and they're totally out in terms of corporate governance, and you've moved on that as at December 31 last year, so you've done the right thing with that. But every director up there has more than a million shares in Oxiana or options, and when Brian Jamieson joined, you gave him a million options. And it's an absolute no-no to give non-executive directors options. And you've gone and given him a million, so he's got the same size equity play as the others. So I suspect that might be one of the problems as well. So I just say to you, by all means, pay your directors more. But if you are seeking another independent director, I think you should pay them within this cap, which we're voting on today, and not do a separate options play, because I can guarantee that that's an absolute red rag to your shareholders, who are the ones who have revolted today over the remuneration policy, your shareholders, half of them. And so when you do put on another director, can you please just do the plain vanilla cash like other top 50 companies do that you're aspiring to be? Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. I'm not sure whether you speak for those people who voted against and represent them. So we will be exploring the views. I've said before that participation in shares of the company is, we think, very important. We have, in fact, outperformed, as Owen said, every company in the ASX over the last 5 years. Thank you very much. Part of that may be that we're all very, very focused on what shareholder returns are. And I think that participation by directors in that is an important part of it, as I believe so is participation by management. So, you know, I listen to you, but we will take our advice sagely about what we think are the right motivators to get the best and outstanding performance for our shareholders. Are there any other questions?